Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. So I'm going to be talking about a study that I'm conducting on the association between joint use agreements and adolescent physical activity and sedentary behavior. First, I want to disclose I have no relationships. And then I want to acknowledge my co-authors on the study, Jamie Shrieke, and Frank Chalupka, who are both with me at University of Illinois at Chicago, and then Lloyd Johnston, who is at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan, and our funders, which are the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation through the Bridging the Gap Research Study, and then the National Institute on Child Health and Human Development. So I'm just going to start my presentation by giving you a little background and significance on trends for physical activity and sedentary behavior. I'm going to talk to you about some school district policy data that we collected on joint use agreements and how we constructed an index that we're using in our analyses. And then go over some of the results that we found, looking primarily at differences in different populations and moderating effects for gender, race, ethnicity, and across ages. So I know I'm preaching to the choir here that you all probably know this, but you know, over time, as kids get older, we start to see significant decreases in them meeting the physical activity recommendations, which is 60 minutes of physical activity daily. They do pretty well to some extent at younger ages, although they still, you know, you still have less than 50% meeting the guidelines. But as you get older into adolescence, it really, you see major declines, and you also see huge differences by gender between males and females, with females getting much lower levels of physical activity. So, you know, we're always looking for ways to try and increase physical activity in kids, but especially in girls. And then when you're talking about sedentary time, we've also been seeing increases in sedentary behavior over time as well. This is some data from a study that was conducted in 2010, and it's looking at different types of media that, you know, primarily screen time, but not all. There's some print on here as well. And you see that there's an increase. As we've been seeing declines in sedentary or in physical activity over time, you're also seeing increases in sedentary behavior. You can also see here that there's an increase in TV viewing over time, but if you look at total media use, TV content has also been decreasing, although it still makes up 60% of sedentary screen time that kids are participating in. You know, there's also, other than just screen, there's other types of time that kids are being sedentary. You know, on average, the total amount that they're sedentary is about 6 to 8 hours per day. This includes, you know, their commute to school. There's been a decline in active travel, walking and biking to school. Most of them are sitting on buses or being driven in cars. They also spend about 50% of the time in the during school, which makes up on average about somewhere between 6 to 7 hours of the day. So 50% of that time they're sitting in class, not moving. They're sedentary when they're doing homework, and then all the other discretionary time, like playing video games, being on the computer, and everything else that, you know, we looked at. And I've become very interested in sedentary behavior, independent of looking at just physical activity, because it comes with its own health risks. You know, research has shown that if you are sedentary for more than 2 hours per day, it's associated with higher BMI, decreased fitness, decreased self-esteem, decreased pro-social behavior, and decreased academic achievement. Many of the same outcomes that have, you know, when you're physically active, you see positive effects. But you can still meet the physical activity recommendations, and if you're still sedentary greater than 2 hours a day, you're going to see negative effects. So these are two areas of behavior that we need to look at. And this is just showing that as youth get older, the time that they are in school and they're being sedentary, it increases. So, I don't know, for those of you that may not be familiar with what a joint use agreement is, it's called joint or shared use agreement, and it's a way to increase opportunities for children and adults to be more physically active, and it usually refers to two or more entities, although it's usually with a school and some other city or private organization where you share indoor and outdoor spaces like gyms or athletic fields and playgrounds, and these are normally on school grounds. And it's a way that you share resources to keep cost downs and communities healthy. There's been a big push for implementing joint use agreements in places that might have few parks or other types of physical activity opportunities available in them as a way to just increase opportunities for physical activity. In 2012, we actually, through the Bridging the Gap project, we developed this research brief where we took the same data that I'm going to be talking about for the analyses that I've been working on. This is data that was collected in the 2009-2010 school year, and we compiled from a national sample of school districts. We actually collected all of their joint use agreements. And what we found is that actually most school districts out there already have joint use agreements in place. In 93% of our schools, they actually had a joint use agreement already on the books. So they're out there, but what we also found is that they need more specificity, that they're very vague and they don't clearly define which facilities can be used for recreational purposes or when the facilities can be used or who is eligible to use them. So our conclusions based on that research brief were specifically that decision makers should ensure that the agreements clearly identify eligible facilities that may be used for recreational purposes, that it clearly defines eligible users and the time when facilities are available, and also specify any liability and repair responsibilities for eligible users. So we built on that brief, and we took those data, and we constructed a couple of different joint use agreement indices. We constructed two, and I'm primarily going to talk about one today, but I'll give you background on the two. Really, the only difference in the two is that one looked at schools that gave priority to the schools themselves and their affiliated programs, or schools that gave priority to different community groups, like your park and recreation departments, YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs. And then we also looked at whether or not they specified use across different time points, like was it available in the evenings, weekends, holidays, after school, before school, during vacation breaks, and then if they specified use of specific indoor facilities. If they had a pool, could people use the pool? Could they use the gym? For outdoor facilities, you know, it would be the sports fields, track, whatever might be available. And then we also have measures that we coded from the policies that include whether or not the policy indicated if facilities are accessible during times that do not interfere with school or business, school business or other activities, so that if the school had something going on, it would trump any community group being able to use the facility during that time. And then we looked at different responsibility and for repair and liability clauses, such as if, you know, there was some kind of indication if someone was responsible for property repair, if there was damages, and then if there's some kind of identification of a method for property repair, if there's a clause looking at school board liability, proof of liability insurance, for example, or a clause looking at risk of loss section. So basically something that would base, you know, for example, freeing the district of responsibility or liability of loss or damage if an outside group were, using the property at that given time. And so we have these data available in this national sample of school districts. We also have self-report student data of 8th, 10th, and 12th graders attending public schools within those same districts. And they're asked a number of measures for both for physical activity and sedentary behavior. And they report on how many days in the last 7 days they were physically active for at least 60 minutes. If they have participated in any school athletic teams, if they participate in any type of competitive sports, whether it's in school or if it's through a community group or some other organized sport organization. And then they also have a question on how often they exercise vigorously. For the sedentary behavior, it captures information from the students on how often they, you know, how many hours a week are they using the internet to do things like email or instant message or play games, shop, search, download music. How much other time are they spending on the computer doing other things that aren't internet-based but are also not related to school or work. And then it also gets at TV viewing, how many hours a day are they spending watching TV. So, you know, one of the things that's nice about this study is there's very little evidence out there that actually examines the impact of joint use agreements on physical activity outcomes. So, and the few that are out there are usually looking at just one community, and so it's not very generalizable. So this study, you know, builds on that existing limited evidence by being the first study to examine the impact of these policies on a national sample of adolescents and their physical activity and sedentary behavior. We conducted generalized ordered logit and logistic cross-sectional analyses that use survey commands to account for sampling weights and clustering of the schools. And then we also controlled in the models for a number of individual level and community level factors. So we started out by controlling for gender, race, ethnicity, grade, parental education, students' perceptions of whether or not they felt safe going to and from school, to get at neighborhood safety perceptions, community level median household income, local sprawl, and then also for the liability and repair responsibility clauses from the joint use agreements. So what we found was not much in the way of any relationships when we looked at the sample as a whole, but when we started to break it down, we started to see relationships. So looking at the joint use agreement scale and African-American student daily physical activity, so the question that asked them how many days during the week they're physically active for at least 60 minutes, we found positive associations that when you had more specific joint use agreements on the books, it was associated with the African-American students being physically active on at least 4, 5, or 6 days over the course of a week.
Left?
Okay. when we started to look at school-based sports participation, we found mixed results. When we were breaking it out, African-American students still had a positive relationship, as did 12th grade students, but we found that more specific joint use agreements was associated with less school-based sports participation for Latino students and female students. With our sedentary behavior outcomes, the results were consistent that more specific joint use agreements were associated with lower sedentary behavior in general with African-American students and African-American students and 12th grade students and Latinos. So in general, results suggest that more specific joint use agreements were positively associated with increased physical activity and reduced sedentary behavior with certain subgroups. However, we also found that joint use agreements that prioritized The school facility use by outside community organizations was also associated with decreased sports participation with certain vulnerable populations, specifically Latinos and girls. So, you know, more research is definitely needed to determine whether there's specific provisions within the joint use agreements that positively or negatively impact adolescent physical activity and sedentary behavior. You know, one of the things that we're going to do specific to the negative associations that we found with physical activity is it may be that those communities in general offer fewer school-based opportunities, and it may be the communities that community programs where the students are getting their physical activity. We do have some data on that. We just haven't had a chance to get it coded and put it into the analyses yet. So that's one of the things that we're going to do and see if that's really what's driving that result. Okay. Thank you.
About 4 minutes for questions.
No questions. All right.
Did you look at any differences with rural and urban communities?
Well, we control for sprawl, which so these results are all above and beyond rural and community or rural and urban. And in most of the models, sprawl was not significant. So that's sprawl is your measure of how compact the community is. So usually, if it takes in population density and like intersection density of streets. So the more densely populated it is, it's usually urban, and the more sparse it is, it's usually rural. And there don't appear to be any significant differences currently across urbanization.
Yeah, because I've worked in communities that there are 1,500 people surrounded by wilderness.
Right.
And so the sprawl.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, but I've seen these challenges where there's one school gym in the whole town, and then it's occupied with sports, and other kids don't have access and things.
We did not find any differences in the joint use provisions by urbanization. There are differences across income, community level income, you know, where you have fewer provisions in lower income neighborhoods, but not by urbanization. Yes.
I missed right at the beginning, but did you look at, you know, programs if the facilities were just open, that people could come versus
We did telephone interviews with rec departments where we have some of that information, and we're currently still coding it. So I will be looking at it, but we haven't had a chance to add it to these models yet. We had done some pilot testing of our telephone survey, and so we asked about just like the few most popular sports-related activities that were offered. Dance was a big one for girls, and then court sports and field sports, so like basketball or soccer and baseball for field sports. So, I mean, it is limited in what we have. We certainly aren't capturing everything, but we're capturing the most popular. Okay, well, no more questions. Thank you.